It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Today's Fight Disciples podcast is brought to you in association with Athletic Greens, the lifestyle-friendly multivitamin. Whether you eat keto... paleo, vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free, we've got you covered. Contains less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no nasty chemicals or artificial anything, while still tasting good. It supports better sleep quality and recovery. It supports mental clarity and alertness, which I can obviously give the thumbs up to. As I'm sure you're aware, tons of people take some type of multivitamin, and it's important to choose one with high quality ingredients that your body will actually absorb. AG1 is a small micro habit with big benefits. It's one thing that you can do every single day to take care of yourself. We've a little bit more on our journey with Athletic Greens featured in today's MMA podcast, so make sure you tune into that. But to make it easy for you, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/fightdisciples. That's athleticgreens.com/fightdisciples to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
This is
Fight Disciples.
Welcome to podcast episode number 645. We are the Fight Disciples, powered by Monterex. Yes, tell you a little bit more about that in a moment or two. This is our boxing podcast. If it's the first time you ever come across us, you can subscribe on iTunes. You can also subscribe if you want to watch us via our YouTube channel. And if you want any other feed like Spotify, thank you very much for all those Spotify rap tags this week.
Yeah.
You could do that on our website, fightdisciples.com. Our social media links are all on that website as well. So we're right across the board, including TikTok. That's right. You might have seen Nick doing a bit of TikToking this week. That's yes, he was. I noticed that you used a lovely little filter there to give yourself a little bit of extra rouge. Tried to give yourself a little bit of extra color, didn't you, son?
Well, there's something wrong with these lights. Like, I've got all these filters for these lights, and I just can't seem to get the balance right. So I've left them white, but I always get accused when we film by you and by Bisman of looking super pasty. So I thought, you know, well, I'll put a little bit of a Los Angeles wash over that filter. There you go. Why not? Which is why Liverpool in December was looking absolutely lovely there on TikTok.
Yes, it was there, mate. Yeah. Anyway, you're up and running now with your TikTok, so people can go and follow him, The Fight Disciples on TikTok, just in case you are on it. I don't know what he's going to do. He might do some dances, he might just do some viral things. I think it's mainly going to be at fights, around fighters, and a bit of reaction cam when he's sat ringside, but there might be some other stuff in there that involves his chickens. All right, so if you want to get involved with it, you're more than welcome to do so.
You will, you know, also spot the appeal from people to see the chickens is unreal.
Was it
unreal? That was the main... I asked the question. I said, which fight should I preview in Nick's picks? And I got completely ignored. And all people were saying was, let's see the chickens. Weird. So we might do something with the chickens a little bit closer to Christmas.
There you go. The alternate at social media for all Fight Disciples. If you want some TikToking, get yourself on that. You will notice as well, if you are watching the show, and a moment or two ago I did mention that we are powered by... and we've got a new partner. That's right. The lovely people at Monterex. You may have seen some of their tackle knocking about on various fighters. Leon Edwards is one of their athletes. We have partnered with them. And we've got some new apparel, of which Nicholas is sporting right now. Look at you looking all swish. I've noticed as well that mine's not come along as of yet, but don't worry, it will be here this week because I'm going to drive over to his house and bloody get it. That's what I'm going to do. But it looks good, that, mate. Nice little bit of tackle there. Is it a warmer or is it a light one, that one? Because obviously...
This is a nice little bit of a, I would say it's a athleisure, casual top. I actually went to an MMA show a couple of weeks ago, a bit of a small hall thing last weekend before last, and you'd think the event was sponsored by it. You know, this is what the cool kids are wearing right now, as usual. The Fight Disciples, we only partner.
Why are you wearing it?
The very best, the hottest brands in the market. You've probably seen Monterex on your favorite athlete / rapper / influencer. Hence the reason why I've got one on. I guess that's what I am these days. Looking the part. You've probably seen Monterex as well in places like Foot Asylum, JD Sports. Yeah. Listen, we've been approached over the years by many a brand. Let's be honest. Quite a few brands out there, you know who you are, have tried to throw a little garment over the shoulder of the lads. And we've said, nah, mate, boohoo off. Wink, wink. Offered us, thank you very much. What a little bit upmarket for you, son. We only settle for the best. And then obviously a conversation struck up with the amazing lads over at Monterex. I am a huge fan of their gear anyway. I think I had a t-shirt on doing Nick's picks just a couple of weeks ago. And that conversation has now led to a full-on partnership where Fight Disciples moving forward will be powered by Monterex.
Have you,
Alex, honest, Ad, you will get some gear soon, honest.
Yeah, thanks. Have you negotiated that you're part of the catalogue shoot? This is what happens. So I'm open for any commercial deal, any. So I don't want to shut any doors with anybody going forward in the future. But this man here, when he goes into a negotiation and he's around the table, one, he leaves me out of it. And he goes in there by himself, and I'm sure 100% he's negotiating himself some type of modelling contract to be part of the catalogue. Is that going to happen in the not too distant future with these lovely lads?
Well, the thing is, they've already got a bunch of fighters, people like, you know,
Leon.
It's Leon Edwards, Brendan Lochnane. You know, there's a theme here, guys.
Yeah.
Leon Edwards, brand new shiny UFC belt. Brendan Lochnane, brand new shiny PFL belt. Fight Disciples. Old and shiny, best podcast in the business. Hey, well done, Monterex. They know their stuff. Amazing.
Oh, you're a card, man. Listen, I've had a bit of a weird week.
They might do me in like the high and mighty section of the catalogue. You know what I mean? The big boys.
Yeah,
section.
Mature.
Is the treble XL sizes for the big boys?
Nah, mate. You've lost a lot of timber. You're doing all right with that. Don't you worry about it. You'll be in the mature section. Something for the ladies, the housewives. Listen, obviously you've had a good week doing the commercial deals and get yourself a new trackie. Wicked. Fingers crossed. Like I said, I'll get mine later on this week. I've had a bit of a weird one this week, mate, before we start talking about boxing and what's happened, because there's been some good stuff. And we'll get stuck into some good stuff in a minute. There's been some weird stuff as well. And some of that is going to play out to my weird week. Three things have happened, which have taken me on a little bit of an emotional rollercoaster. The Fight Disciples have been all over me on social media. They've been tagging me in all sorts of stuff. They were tagging me earlier on in the week, mentioning that a former world champion was on another podcast elsewhere, mentioning my name. And he couldn't decide whether he hated me or whether he admired me. When I actually went and had a little bit of a look at what was being said about me, it was basically an argument with himself and being angry that I'm saying the things that he wants to say. That's basically what the conversation was. So I went on a bit of an emotional roller coaster with that. Then, secondly, you may have seen me do an interview this week with a particular fighter. I've been censored again. I'll never learn.
Yes.
I'll never learn with this, because I promised earlier on in the year when we walked away from a broadcast deal for censorship that I'd never get myself in that situation again. Dumb fuckery, I just went, okay, and went straight back into that situation and ended up with half an interview led on the floor. And then, check this out. Earlier on the week, I mentioned it a moment or two ago. We were getting tagged in quite a lot from you that watch and listen to our show. And those that listen via Spotify were tagging us in their Spotify raps and obviously pointed out where we sit in the podcast that you listen to. Thank you so much for that, and obviously boosting our egos. And also Spotify send us information on our listenership on their platform, because obviously we've got a contract with them. And to find out earlier on in the week that we are in the top 1% most followed podcast in the world is quite mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Thank you for it, of course. Thank you for it. And the conclusion of that, Nicholas, for me, was we obviously know what we're doing. Now, this might sound like I'm blowing my own trumpet here, but just bear with me, because there will be self-deprecation coming on in a minute, all right? When you are in the top 1% of most followed podcasts in the world, you would kind of think that the content that you are creating lends to the fact that the people listening to you are like-minded. You kind of get what they want, so therefore you are supplying that demand. And I think that we've done that over the last 6 years. I would sit here and say, do you know something? I think because we are fans and we are lovers of fight sports, boxing, MMA, that the stuff that we say kind of resonates with you because you're feeling the same things that we're feeling. So when we have an opinion on something, we're kind of all on the same page. That's where I was at the start of the week with this Spotify thing. Fast forward to Saturday, mate, right? Obviously, I'm assigned to Tottenham Hotspur Stadium for Tyson Fury versus Derek Chisora. I'm on the commentary team, and I'm thinking to myself during the day, I wonder how many people are going to rock up tonight. I wonder how many people are actually going to be there, because for the life of me, I can't think of anybody that I know that's bought a ticket. Not anybody that's bought a ticket to go and watch this fight tonight. So I thought to myself, right, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'm going to live this like a fan. I'm going to jump on the tube. I'll get up there. It's a nightmare to get there, by the way. I'll get on the tube, get up to Seven Sisters, and then that 2-mile walk up to Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, get amongst it and see what type of demographic has bought a ticket for the event this evening. Mm-hmm. Because if you remember a couple of weeks back, I went to one of those Misfits shows where KSI was on. And I came away from the conclusion going, okay, it's a very different demographic. It's not really a boxing crowd that are going to the KSI shows. I get it. Yeah. I understand why it's popular, because they're buying into celebrity rather than buying into the sport. Anyway, I'm on the tube. A few people are talking about the Tyson Fury fight. All right, yeah, you look like your stereotypical boxing fan. I gets out onto the high road. I'm walking up there. Loads of boxing fans around me. I'm thinking, bloody hell, right, okay. Normal people. Normal, what I would class as normal boxing people on the way up to Tottenham Hotspur Stadiums. As I said in the build-up to this, when the fight was made, I'm like going, I don't think that's going to sell out, man. I don't think that's going to sell. Because in my head, I'm buying a ticket for the sporting contest. And on paper, that was a mismatch.
Correct.
Mate, I couldn't be more wrong. I have no idea what the boxing public wants anymore. 60,000 people. Literally, I'm not lying now. Right? I'm not trying to ham this up or to paint a false picture. Trust me, it was rammed. It was fucking 60,000 people rocked up to watch Tyson Fury versus Derek Chisora in December, near enough zero on the temperature gauge for a fight that was a mismatch on paper and even more so in real life. People turned up for it. They paid their hard-earned money to cash for it. And they went to a venue that's an absolute nightmare to get to in order to watch it. So I comes away from the event going, I've absolutely no idea what you lot want anymore. None. Absolutely no idea what the modern-day boxing fan is willing to spend their money on for a night at an event. No idea.
That was one of the first things I messaged you, because I knew obviously you got into ringside and stuff, because obviously on TV it's hard to tell by the angles, and the overhead shot only really showed you the pitch, and the pitch of course wasn't full of chairs, but what they'd done is they'd left obviously wide triangles for the obstructed view that you get from having to put a roof over the ring. So I wasn't, you know, I was like, okay, it doesn't look like they've got as many chairs in as possible, but what they have done is made sure that everyone can see, which, you know, is not necessarily a bad thing. But you couldn't really see the crowd because obviously it got dark so quickly. Obviously, I didn't engage with the undercard. I'll be honest, I only turned up halfway through the Mendy fight. But I was curious to know because, like you, I was like, you know, I was adamant for weeks. One of them's going to get injured. The fight's going to get pulled because no one's buying tickets. I was going on Ticketmaster, tickets available seemingly everywhere. I was going on resale portals and eBay and places like that. Just curiosity this week, last week. And there was ticket touts selling them at a loss. And I was like, mate, it's going to be a ghost town. So when I text you and you text back saying, mate, it's rammed. And then they did a crowd. It was one of the ring walks. And it suddenly turned into a Coldplay concert. And I thought, right, either that place is rammed and everyone's got their mobile phone and the torches up. Or there's fucking torch bots everywhere. Yeah, CGI torch bots everywhere. To make it look full when it's not actually, but like the top tier and everything. So yeah, I'm with you. That was kind of my angle was going to be. I don't know. Are we talking the wrong language? You know, is that what people want? Do people want to see Tyson Fury just beat up anybody? Like, are we at that stage like the Roman gladiators where we just want to see our champion gladiator just slay a bunch of fucking slaves who are half riddled with whatever, just slung him. Listen, we've all seen the Gladiator movie. That's kind of what happens. You know, the slaves get thrown in. The Ace Gladiator comes out. He's got all the swords and he kills them all and slays them all. Is that where we are as a society? Is that what we're all about? Because I tweeted during the fight and it was round number four when I first tweeted it and I said, stop the fight.
Yeah.
I've seen enough. This was my greatest fear, was that this was going to happen. Was that tight? That's why all week when I was doing radio shows, when we did the preview show and everything, I was like, Tyson inside four, man. Tyson's just going to go in, obliterate him, get him out of there. But instead, Tyson, for some reason, decided to make it a spectacle and to carry his friend in inverted commas.
I agree.
But for me, that made it 1,000 times worse than if he'd have just put his foot down and just got Derek out of there inside 3 rounds. Because I tell you what, if he'd have chinned Derek Chisora in the third round or the second round, I think it was the second, where Chisora was fucked. He fell against the ropes. His legs were gone. All Tyson had to do was go in with three more shots. The referee would have had no choice. Victor Lofton would have to stop it. And instead, Tyson takes a big step backwards, allows Derek to recover. Allows Derek to get his head back on his shoulders a little bit, allows Derek to see out the round. That is not a friend who is helping another friend, you know, put up. That is someone that is, you know, it's like you're inflicting this punishment, like you're punishing him more by doing that. Put it this way, if we'd have stopped him in the second round, Derek Chisora would have been able to eat that fucking burger in the changing rooms afterwards instead of sit there holding on to it, not being able to open his jaw to eat a burger while Tyson and his son and all the families chatted away. I'll be honest, after round four, I found it really difficult to watch.
Same.
I wanted to turn it off, but obviously this is how I make a living, so I couldn't turn it off. And I felt a little bit disgusted that in 2022... this is being served up as entertainment because it wasn't entertainment. It wasn't sport, and it certainly wasn't entertaining, not for me anyway. But maybe 60,000 people thought otherwise. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Listen, I can't speak for 60,000 people. I can only tell you what I was doing on commentary. Obviously, on paper, we told people in the build-up to this, it wasn't competitive on paper. Derek Chisora was pulled out of thin air. He was shoehorned into a ranking system, of which I'll get to in a minute, in order to make a fight for Tyson Fury. It was even less so competitive in real life. First round, second round, Tyson Fury looks like Tyson Fury. He's going through the gears and you're thinking to yourself, right, here we go. This is over very, very quickly. After the third round, Tyson Fury, in my opinion, takes his foot right off the gas because it's evident that the levels between the two guys is massive, absolutely huge. Derek Chisora has absolutely no business whatsoever being in a ring with Tyson Fury at this stage of his career. And Tyson Fury then, as you've just said, goes through a period where he is coasting. I think Victor Lachlan is looking at that fight, praying for Tyson Fury just to put a flurry together so he can jump in, because he didn't give him any reason to jump in at all throughout the course of the next 6-7 rounds. He didn't do that. And I think Tyson Fury was caught between a rock and a hard place because he's praying for the fucking corner to say, not today, Derek. We'll call it, man. will pull herself out of that. I thought the corner were incredibly brave. Nobody wants a fucking brave corner at all. Nope. Because after that fourth round, when the fourth round concluded, I'm on comms obviously with Gareth and Andy Clark and Spencer, and they're all chatting about it. And I was the first to flag it up, and I went, he's took his foot off the gas, he's coasting this, he doesn't want to finish him. And a couple of people did argue with me about it, but it became evident then over the next 2 to 3 rounds that that is exactly what was happening. He didn't want to finish Derek Chisora. He didn't want to give him that knockout blow and absolutely splatter him in front of 60,000 people. You're right in what you're saying, mate. It was an uncomfortable watch for a long period of time. Now, from a promotional point of view, promoters are going to promote. Promoters are going to make fights. They're going to try their best to put fights in front of us. And then it's up to us as the paying audience, whether we buy it or whether we don't buy it. Well, from an audience point of view, they bought it. 60,000 people did turn up. They did come to watch the fight. I don't know what the pay-per-view numbers will be like, but I imagine that with the buzz of the football at the weekend and the way that people were feeling and, you know, the Christmas markets and all that type of shit, people might have bought it. It might have done okay on TV. My problem here is with the WBC. That fight should not be sanctioned for a world title fight. That is not the premier showcase of heavyweight boxing. The premier heavyweight on the planet was put in the ring with a guy levels, serious levels below him, and therefore one could have been seriously hurt on the night, and who knows what that level of beating will lead to in 10 years' time. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen to Derek Chisora in years down the line. I know that he got a good payday. I don't begrudge him that. He's been a wonderful servant to the game of boxing, and I absolutely want him to get as much money as possible. But at what cost? At what cost? Just to watch him be a human punch bag for 10 rounds? Because that's all he was. He was never winning the fight, never winning it at all. And he was just getting tenderized for 10 rounds. Like you say, I was watching it after 4 rounds, maybe even earlier, 3 rounds, 3, 4 rounds, I was literally cringing at watching it.
Yeah. Yeah, and usually, you know, don't get me wrong, I really put Tyson Fury on a pedestal, not only as a sportsman, not only because of the journey that he's been on in his career to be as low as he once was and then to have came back, this whole Lazarus thing, and to be the best heavyweight on the planet. And I truly believe he is the best heavyweight on the planet. But it's the thing he does for a 6'9", 260-pound man to be able to move the way he does, to have hand speed, the shot selection, the fight IQ, the way he's able to just go into a ring and not be flustered. There's no sign of nerves with him whatsoever. He fascinates me as a fighter. I think right now he's probably one of a very small handful of this generation that is truly, truly put on this planet to become a pugilist. And I'm usually in awe of that. And I've been lucky enough to be ringside for some of his greatest moments. Hence two Deontay Wilder fights for a start. But I got no enjoyment from watching Tyson Fury at the weekend. After six minutes, I'd say midway through round 3, I was like, okay, get him out of there now. That's enough. That's enough now. Because there was no empathy there for... It's like he didn't realise what he was doing was making it worse. Just get him out. Just get it done. As you say, Victor Lachlan looked like he was begging for the fight to be finished. And then when it got to like 7 or 8, I'm like, I fell for Victor Lachlan because he's looking to stop the fight.
He's desperate for it. He was desperate.
Yeah, he's looking for that one final shot. There were so many times where he was really struggling, Derek. And yet, I know why Victor didn't stop it. It just needed that one more. It was always Tyson kept punching just that one shot too early, just that one barrage too soon, just that one uppercut short, which would have allowed Victor to go, right, that's enough now. He just gave Derek enough room to be able to throw a big wild hook that would miss by a mile to come forward and push Tyson against the ropes and have some kind of front step maneuver, even though he missed all night, which just stopped Victor on his toes and made him come back. And in the end, obviously, Victor went to Chisora's corner. That should never happen. You know, Don should care enough about Derek.
Yeah.
And his long-term health, not here right now. And listen, you know me. You know how I feel about world title fights especially. There is no tomorrow. And if you're someone that's coming through, like a Ruiz, or because there was a lot of conversation in the build-up from bullshitters, that's what I'll call them, bullshitters, that were going, oh, well, you know, this could be Hazeem Rahman, Lennox Lewis. This could be, you know.
Well, they were the betting odds, weren't they? That was the betting odds.
Douglas versus Mike Tyson. Yeah, but those men were young, undefeated fighters given an opportunity from nowhere, a Rocky Balboa moment. They were always going to turn up. They were always going to roll the dice. They were always going to be a very small but real threat because they got the opportunity to change their lives. You're talking about Derek Chisora, who's been in what, fucking 10, 12 world title fights and lost them all? Like, there is a tomorrow for him. His tomorrow is, how does he spend the rest of his life? How does he, because CTE, you know, I tweeted this as well, and I didn't tweet it easily because it's a tough subject. And anyone that's read Tris Dixon's book about CTE, if you haven't and you're a true boxing fan, I urge you to read it because it rings real alarm bells about what these guys are doing with their brains. And it's a hard read. It took me the best part of a year to read it because I had to keep putting it down because it makes you question what you're doing in this world and where your passion is in this world when the ramifications are so severe. I tweeted that because I was like, he is a poster boy right now for CTE. All he's doing is taking multiple headshots without reply. And let's be honest, even in the build-up, Chisora these days isn't exactly the sharpest tack in the box already. There's already signs of a long, tough career, and that's what he's had, a long, tough career. I know Tyson, I'd like to think Tyson was coming from the right place to go. Listen, I'm giving me mate a payday before he walks away. I think he comes from the right place and going, I ain't going to leave Derek flat on his face. I'm going to, you know, he's me mate, I'll step back on off him. But in doing so, what he's inflicted could have way bigger ramifications on the future lifestyle of Derek Chisora. And the comments, you know, some of the people on commentary as well. And I watched the ESPN commentary yesterday because I like to get a bit of a balance on what the Americans and what they were saying about it. But the ESPN commentary, they kept using weight, like from 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 6 rounds. Oh, but you know, he's so brave, Derek Chisora, isn't he? Oh, he's got the heart of a lion, Derek Chisora. Oh, call it for what it is. Are you going to be there in 10, 15 years' time when fucking poor Derek's eating his Sunday dinner through a straw? Are you going to be standing clapping behind him going, you're a lion, Derek? Hey, oh, you're so brave, Derek. Fuck off. It's bullshit. The fight should have been stopped. His corner should have pulled him out of the fight. And let's be honest, the fight should never have happened in the first place. It was horrible.
Derek needs to call time, what? Yeah?
Well, yeah, listen, Derek should have called time a while ago. And hopefully this is the final payday that he needs. And hopefully we're wrong. Hopefully he's got an incredibly thick skull. And hopefully in 10 years' time, he's still quite eloquent with his words. Well, he becomes eloquent with his words and he's fine. And we're totally wrong. One conversation I had last week, and I think it's a conversation worth having again now, is one radio presenter said to me, yeah, but there's nobody else, is there? What?
Fucking hell.
There's nobody else available. There's no Usyk. There's no AJ. So who else could he fight? He's just beat Dillian. There's nobody else to fight. Let's just make this clear. You're talking about the number one heavyweight on the planet, Tyson Fury, the guy at the top of the tree, the guy that's undefeated in this era of boxing, the guy with supposedly the number one crown in the sport, the WBC belt. Not only that, he's the lineal champion as well, for what that's worth. He was the guy that beat the man in Germany. He beat Klitschko. He went there. He come back. Excuse me. He went through the most fearsome puncher of this generation, maybe all time, Deontay Wilder. As great as Usyk is, there ain't no conversation. Tyson Fury's top of the tree in a sport that is built like this towards the heavyweight division. Baddest man on the planet, call it whatever you want. You're telling me nobody else was available. What about Andy Ruiz? Oh, yeah, but he's got an eliminator lined up with Deontay Wilder. Yeah, a fucking eliminator for this belt. You're telling me he wouldn't want to fight Tyson. Tell you what, mate, forget about Deontay Wilder. You want to fight Tyson Fury in a football stadium in the UK for the belt that you're trying to have an eliminator for? You tell me Andy Ruiz is going to say no. What about Hergovic? Well, you know, Hergovic, he's got an eliminator for the IBF. Okay, so speak to Hergovic then. You want to wait and see if you get that shot at the IBF, or do you want to just come and fight in a fucking stadium for millions of pounds against Tyson Fury now? Circumnavigate Usyk. Go straight to the guy at the top of the tree, Phil. You want to offer the fight to fucking Luis Ortiz? Okay, over the hill, aged, never fought Tyson Fury before. You got Martin Bacoli coming off a career best win based out of Scotland. Everyone, no one will call his name. He'd have took the fight. Michael Hunter, big heavyweight, only ever lost once. That was against Usyk down at cruiserweight. Do you want a shot at the champ? You're telling me he says no? What about Zhang, who beat Hergovic anyway, the big Chinese guy? You're telling me that he wouldn't have took the opportunity to fight in a stadium? Makhmudov, what about him? Undefeated fucking Russian based out of Canada. No one will say his name. He's like the boogeyman of the heavyweight division. There you go. There's six or seven. Did any of those six or seven receive a phone call in the build-up to say, do you want to fight in a stadium against the best heavyweight on the planet for all the riches that come with it? Did any of those seven answer the phone to that? Or did we just go, let's bring Chisora in and basically ruin him? Shite.
On a positive note, and there is a slight positive note, it looks like we're heading in the direction of the Usyk fight.
Oh, Joyce. Oh, Joyce. I love the way Joyce jumped in there, by the way. I'm all for that. Yeah, man, fuck it. Why not? Listen, again, did they offer the fight to Joe Joyce? Probably not. But I love the way Joyce jumped on the ropes. Usyk was there to get on the ropes to make that fight. And Joe Joyce, somewhere along the line, someone went, get up there, Joe. And by doing that, Joe Joyce has gone, made it quite clear. Listen, if you two clowns can't get it on, like you couldn't get it on this time, for whatever reason, if it ain't happening, I'm here. This is a three-way conversation now, kids. Doesn't go anywhere else. So I love Joe Joyce for doing that. And you know what? I'm not against any of those fights. But in this day and age, after that drivel we were served on Saturday night, as long as two of those three fight each other next, I'm going to be happy.
Well, it has to be Fury and Usyk.
Of course
it does. With all due respect to Joe Joyce, of course, yeah? I want to see Joe Joyce in with those guys, but not next. The next fight is Tyson Fury versus Alexander Usyk. Usyk, look at him. I mean, he looked like he was doing Millwall away at the weekend, didn't he? Rocks up, home end, got spotted. Turns out he goes, go on, man, let's fucking go. Didn't flinch once. Now, lots of people are coming at me saying, well, it's because he didn't understand a word that bloody Tyson Fury was saying to him, calling him a sausage and all this type of stuff. Listen, he knew what the fucking crack was. He can read body language and he can read aggression. Usyk didn't give a shit. He went there with, listen, people will say as well, he was only in there because he's mates with Derek Baranchik, who was on the undercard. Nah, man, Baranchik's fight was fucking shoehorned onto this card, so Usyk could be there to get in the face of Tyson Fury. This is what you're supposed to do. If you want to fight, go and get the fight. We've been saying this for 6 years and been hypercritical of certain fighters in the heavyweight division and various other divisions that don't turn up ringside, that don't fucking get in the face, that don't go proactively into the face of their opponent and say, me and you, motherfucker, stop talking. Let's get this shit on. Now, okay, Usyk didn't say a word. Didn't need to say a word. He's a fucking bomb baddie. He just needed to be there. Every time the bloody big screen went on his face, the crowd booed. 60,000 people booed the fucking former undisputed cruiserweight champion of the world and the unified heavyweight champion. And he just sat there and went like that. Come on, then. All of you. I'll fucking do all of you. He don't give a shit. He's here for one reason and one reason only. He wants that WBC belt. The holder of that WBC belt is Tyson Fury. Afterwards, he's saying, I don't give a fuck if it's in England. Don't give a fuck if it's in Saudi Arabia. I don't give a fuck if it's in space. I want the fucking guy. And I'm like, it has to happen now. If that fight, this is legit now. If that fight does not happen, it is on Tyson Fury. Usyk's in. Usyk's 100% in his ear. He turned up. He's ready to go, man. His people are talking about it all week. Prince Khalid from Saudi Arabia was in attendance at the weekend, mate. They're all there ready to make the fight. If this fight does not happen, it is on Tyson Fury and Tyson Fury alone. This fight has to be the fight that happens next. I get what you're saying about Joe Joyce because there's a matchup. I love it. I can't get enough of it. I love Joe Joyce. But it's that fight. Make that fight first. Let's have a fucking right go. And then who knows? The winner of that can fight Joe Joyce by the back end of next year. Perfect.
Absolutely. Yeah, man. as you say, Usyk's such a spellbinding character. I think that was the, yeah, he is fascinating because he's utterly fearless. He knows what he's getting into. Usyk knows this is the fight that defines his legacy on a whole nother level. You know, I think people in boxing realize that Usyk is one of the greatest boxers of this generation by a country mile. I've personally still got him at the top of the pound for pound list, but it's something else entirely overcoming a Gypsy King. You know,
I think
Tyson
he can beat
Fury
him.
Is a very, very special heavyweight, a very special athlete.
I agree.
Alexander
Usyk can beat him.
Is a very, very special boxer and a very special athlete as well. It's the fight that will take both of their legacies to the next level. I think Tyson's already kind of solidified his legacy, but I think Usyk can absolutely springboard off Tyson's and go to a whole new level of fame and notoriety. And not that he's asked about those things, but if he were to beat Tyson Fury, you're talking about him joining the all-time great list, not just the great list, which is phenomenal for Alexander Usyk. It's a, as you say, it's a fight that's got to happen. The Saudis are all there. It looks like it is happening next. I just like the fact that Joe Joyce... I'd put Joe Joyce as co-main. Find someone good.
He has to be on the card.
Stick Joe Joyce on co-main. Defo.
Yeah, absolutely. Wilder.
Oh, no, he won't fight his mate, will he? That would be amazing, though. It would be amazing.
By the way, with what I was just saying there, I'm not saying that Usyk will. I'm saying he can. He has the skills. He has the speed. He has the footwork. Yeah. He has the shot selection to beat Tyson Fury. My bet on that night, 100%, will be on a draw. Because I think he can win six rounds against Tyson Fury. I reckon he can.
Wow.
Woo-hoo-hoo! That's the fight, man. I don't want to hear any more bullshit. I'm sick of bullshit. I'm sick of it. Don't give me any more of that. Just make the fight. Let's get it on.
Make the fight, baby.
What did you make of Daniel Dubois?
Let me first talk about Daniel Dubois before we talk about timekeeping, judging, refereeing, and Kevin Lorena.
Quickly, on timekeeping, I only found out about the timekeeping thing after the event, mate. I didn't realize because I didn't have a clock in front of me or anything like that. So you're gonna have to talk me through that. So go on, talk to me about Dubois.
So no, first I want to talk about Daniel Dubois. From Daniel Dubois coming away from that, I'm like, right, fantastic learning fight. Shit hit the fan, crisis, absolutely the worst start possibly could have had for the, you know, in this fight against a dangerous operator in Kevin Lorena, who we said last week. I know the kid's a former cruiserweight, but he's big, he's strong, he's had some good wins at heavyweight. He doesn't know how to lose. It's a real threat for Daniel Dubois, and that's exactly how it played out. You know, he's got more experience than Daniel Dubois as well. And that was the worst possible start for Daniel. The fact that he took a knee, chose to take a knee on two occasions, but rolled up. Well, yeah, the first one, yeah, I don't think he had much of a choice first time, but, you know, he took a knee.
Yeah, fair enough.
Certainly the second and third time. But he had the intelligence to do that. And you get that intelligence from coming through the experience he had with Joe Joyce. That is, right, I'm not right yet. I'm going to go down again because that power shot hit. Gets back to his feet. Still not right. His equilibrium's everywhere. Right, I'm going to go down again. I can afford to do it. And he does it three times. He eventually comes back to his feet to see the round out. Turns out to be a sensational decision. Lorena completely drops off in the second round. Dubois allowed the second round to come back into the fight, which he does. Then obviously in the third round, catches Lorena with a beautiful straight right down the middle, drops him on the seat of his pants, closes in, starts throwing enough shots to force the referee to make a decision. If I'm Daniel Dubois and team Daniel Dubois, I come away going, right, fuck me. That was the worst possible script for us, but we dealt with it. You managed it. You came through it. This is what this level is all about. Experiences. Experience of the night. Experience of the co-main event. Experience of a tough guy in the opposite corner. A tough southpaw in the opposite corner. Coming through adversity. Getting your arm raised. Silencing doubters. Fantastic. Daniel Dubois come out of that with a B+. And obviously they've got to drop because he got dropped badly. But brilliant. I'm happy with that from Daniel Dubois. He won't get caught like that again early. But if he does, he knows how to survive. Brilliant. Couldn't be happier. Now, let's talk about the officiating of the fight. because that was quite simply absolutely disgusting. So the first round, now the timekeeper's clock, let's make this clear, the timekeeper's clock and the TV clock are not automatically synced. You are relying on someone at ringside to go ding to start the bell and start a clock at the same time as somebody in the truck running the studio broadcast to press go on the 3 minute countdown clock that you see on your screen.
Yeah.
The reason they do that, the reason you will see when you're watching boxing, when the final 10 seconds clacks and goes, the clock will disappear. The reason being, they don't want you to go, oh, there's 2 seconds left on the clock there or whatever, because there is human error involved that moves the needle slightly in terms of when the clock starts, when the clock finishes. That's why it disappears. However, in this case, the clock was still on the screen when the fight when the round ended. It just so happened that the clock, when I looked at it, around about 8 seconds short of the end of 3 minutes. So the fight actually lasted 2 minutes, 52 and a half seconds, 53 seconds, let's say. So 7 or 8 seconds short. But when you add in the fact that Daniel had been on the floor 3 times, and then you get a short round like that, it's unsurprising that people are going to start asking serious questions. And people picked up on it straight away on social media. You were working, of course, but I was on social media. That's all everyone's going. That round had 10 seconds left. That round had 15 seconds left. That round had... It was around about 7 or 8 seconds. But regardless, there was still time left. The timekeeper stopped the round early. That needs to be investigated by the border control. That needs a formal investigation. Kevin Lorraine and his team should put an appeal in, should be lodging an appeal about that. And if that wasn't enough, I want to talk about Howard Foster and his decision to stop the fight after the bell. Yes, Kevin Lorraine had taken a big right hand, dropped onto the seat of his pants. He got back to his feet. He beat the 8 count, got back to his feet. Daniel Dubois pushed him up against the ropes and was throwing punches and was landing some clean punches. When the bell goes to end the round, Daniel Dubois is mid-flow. I ain't blaming Daniel, but he lands 2 clean shots after the bell. Okay? Now he's in the flow state now. He's been on the floor, for fuck's sake. He's got this guy hit. He wants to get him out of there. No qualms whatsoever with what Daniel Dubois was doing. Howard Foster jumps between them. Great, yeah, you've stopped the fight, Howard. The bell did go. You did hear it. Good lad. And in that very moment, that very second, he waves it off. He waves the fight off. Now, you can't do that. The bell is gone. You should be, one, jumping in. Doesn't matter what Lorena's position is right now, because Lorena has got past the 3 minute point of the third round, which means that he now has 60 seconds to go back to his corner to try and recover. He wasn't on the floor. He's not knocked out cold. He's standing right in front of you. That man deserves 60 seconds to go back, to jump in between. He should then warn Daniel, whoa, 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 couple after the bell there, son. Back to your corner. Come back to Kevin Lorena. Go back to his corner. How you doing? Judge the situation. If he goes to Lorena's corner then, looks at Lorena, and his eyes are spinning in the back of his head, and he goes, you know what, boys? He ain't fit to come out for the fourth round. I'm calling it. I've got no issue whatsoever. But Howard Foster, and we've seen this before from Howard Foster, don't forget. It's the same Howard Foster that stopped the fucking Frock Groves fight when Groves got hit with 1 clean shot after having Frotch on the floor. That Howard Foster, you know, the guy that often does stop fights in favor of the home fighter. Yeah, that's the guy. That's the guy. Anyway, he, for me, should be investigated by the board. Kevin Lorena's team should put in a note to say, now we're not happy with that. And I'll tell you now, I want to see an immediate rematch. Daniel Dubois has got to rematch Kevin Lorena. I don't think it slows Daniel's career down at all. I think it answers some serious questions. I think the Border Control need to make sure it happens, because we've got two real instances there in that three-round fight where there was a major breach of officiating rules. They just need to rematch. That's it. Lorena deserves his opportunity of a rematch.
You're all in today, you are you, son? Ain't that new track is getting you fired right up?
how did more you for me see to add it there. At ringside? Were you able to pick up on any of that stuff?
The timekeeping, no. I didn't know about the timekeeping until obviously the end of the event. And I, again, that just came from reading on social media. The finish was right in front of me. The finish, I thought Lorena was kept up by the ropes at the end. And I can, now that you've said it in the way that you've said it, I can fully understand why you would have that opinion. I did. Maybe it's because I had headphones on. I don't know. I didn't hear the bell. I didn't hear it. I've just seen the barrage. I've seen Lorena's head rock back a couple of times right in front of me, and I've seen the ropes keeping up. Then I've seen Howard Foster jump in and wave this thing off. It felt, in that moment, it felt normal. It felt it felt really, really normal. I'll have to go back and watch it on TV because I didn't hear the bell.
If it was super noisy, maybe Howard Foster didn't hear the bell. The guy's about 80 years old anyway. Maybe Howard Foster didn't hear the bell. But it's Howard Foster's job. You know, having spoken to referees who referee at world title level.
Yeah, of course.
They all say the same thing. You are listening for the klaxon. You're listening for the 10-second klaxon because quite often in fights, you have those big moments in the last 10 seconds where a fighter might try and pinch the round or whatever it may be. So officials at the top level will wait for that klaxon, often acknowledge it. You'll see that a lot. Little thumbs up or you don't look. A little wave in the direction of the timekeeper. Yeah, I've heard that, 10 seconds. Now it's the official job to count to 10 in the head. 10, 9, 8. That's their fucking job to make sure that as soon as that bell goes, if the place, if 60,000 people suddenly go bonkers, you know in your head where that bell's coming in. Howard Foster would have counted to 12 when he waved the fight off. He'd have jumped in mid-flow of Daniel Dubois, even if he hadn't have heard the bell, if he'd have been doing his job properly, and that's counting down from 10. Now, this answer a bigger picture. Just to quickly talk about this with the UFC. What the UFC have done, they've lit up the outside of the octagon now. It's like a HD screen. And at the end of the round, that flashes. I think it's bright red. It flashes red when the bell goes. So even if the noise has gone mental, a referee and official will see this red light, and no, well, that's the end of the round. Maybe that's something boxing could look at, could incorporate to maybe help. And I'm trying to play devil's advocate here and give Howard Foster the benefit of the doubt. But there should have been a moment in that ring. Lorena deserved the opportunity to go back to his corner, have his 60 seconds with his corner. Maybe that's why they didn't kick off. Maybe that's why the corner didn't win spitting feathers like I was at home going, what the fuck? Because maybe it was too noisy. Maybe they did caught up and then go, shit, our guys just got caught. It is what it is. Maybe he had nothing left when he come out for the third because he punched himself out in the first. I don't know. But when they go back and watch that tape, when the South African boxing organization go back and look at that tape, there's got to be a phone call into the border control and into Frank Warren to go, hey, come on, guys. Two serious instances of this fight. We want a rematch. And I'd be happy with the rematch, as I say. Daniel's a long way off the next level anyway. Which other way does he go? I think rematch Kevin Lorena makes sense for everybody.
Yeah, that's fair. Do you want to talk about anything else on this card before I quickly go back to Friday night?
No, thanks.
Okay.
Let's do Friday, baby.
Yeah. Friday night. The fight that we built up... on British soil anyway, as the fight of the weekend. Josh Kelly taking on Troy Williamson, British super welterweight title. It's Sunderland versus Newcastle. I was a bit jealous, actually. Loads of people on social media on the Friday night that were tagging me in various bits that they were on the way up to the arena to go and watch it. That, again, looked packed. It looked like the fans had come out. Now, again, on Friday night, I thought, I kind of know what fans want. There you go. A contest between two super welterweights. Bit of jeopardy, but loads of questions. Will the bull beat the matador? Will the matador return? And will he be able to beat the bull? All those types of things. And it played out brilliantly because I was sat there watching it on TV, angry that I wasn't there ringside watching this fight because it looked atmosphere-wise brilliant. Obviously, you get that banter, don't you, between Sunderland and Newcastle fans anyway. But then what you also got is the return. And it is a return. And I spoke to Josh Kelly yesterday, just back and forth on text, and obviously, he's delighted with his performance and he's delighted that he's managed to quash a load of doubters. And listen, I think a lot of people have got to be honest with themselves. We didn't know where Josh Kelly was at. There's been a lot of talk of Josh Kelly's this, Josh Kelly's that. Yeah. But we haven't really seen it. We haven't seen it for a long period of time. this, I know that this kid has been through a lot over the last 2 years in his personal life. He's been in a dark place. And that's obviously played out in his professional life as well. At the weekend, on Friday night, there was a realization of what Josh Kelly could go on to be. Now, I know that this is British level and people have spoken him up in the past to be European and on a fringe world level. We're not there just yet. I don't think we've still got to go through some challenges. But this was a real challenge. Troy Williamson is no joke. You knew that he was going to consistently keep coming and keep asking questions. And if Josh Kelly had any doubt in his mind about how big his bollocks were, Troy Williamson would find that gap. But at times he had to fight. At times he had to stand tough with him. But when Josh Kelly's bang at it, mate, he's a fucking joy to watch. He's an absolute joy to watch. I know it's a dangerous style that he's got. I know that it's a style that everybody wants to see gets chinned. It's very similar to way back in the day with Naz, isn't it? When Naz fights the way that Naz fights, a lot of people who hate Naz, I just want to see someone test them whiskers. I want to see someone put him down. But if you love boxing, you love watching that style. I love people swaying out of the way of shots and pop-shotting on the back foot. And when Josh Kelly's bang at it, like he was at certain points in this fight, it was a joy to watch, mate. It was beautiful. And I really hope he can build on this now and kick on into 2023.
Yeah, I think the performance itself was outstanding, you know, and you know, people have come at me because I went with Troy Williamson, and listen, I stand by why I made that assessment.
Yeah, I think obviously, a lot of people did.
Obviously, 6-7 rounds in, when Troy is not really cutting off the ring very well, he hasn't gone to the body at all, he's kind of setting a hot tempo, but he's chasing Josh Kelly down in straight lines. I was like, right, okay. Of course, you know, and there's that realization of even if this version of Troy Williamson, 19-0 version of Troy Williamson, if they'd have matched him with Josh Kelly 2 years ago, I'd have picked Josh Kelly all day to stand him on his head. Of course, 2 years is a long time of boxing, and Josh Kelly has been through the ringer over the last 2 years. And whether you like it or not, that's why I went with Troy Williamson. I thought, I don't know where Josh's head is at. I don't know where he's at physically. I don't think he's quite a super welterweight, certainly not a champion, you know, at the next level up. I'd like to see him go back down to welterweight. I thought he looked a little bit fleshy. But again, I'm nitpicking here because you're right. Josh Kelly was sensational on Friday night. Absolutely sensational. And you know what? It couldn't happen to a nicer kid. Because I really like Josh Kelly. Sometimes when I go against fighters, people go, oh, you're a hater. You don't. I fucking really like Josh Kelly. I've always liked Josh Kelly. The only thing with Josh Kelly is I think he's had this baggage of being the next big thing for so long because people who are close to him bill him as the next big thing. And what was beautiful on Friday night was that he turned up. He was quintessentially Josh Kelly. That's what he does. That's how good he is. You know, when he's in his flow state, that's Josh Kelly. Hands by his side, slipping out of punches, landing beautiful big combinations, uppercuts from range, jumping, leaping hooks, slipping away again. It's a joy to watch. You know, me and you grew up with Naz and with fucking, you know, that was part one of the main reasons why we fell in love with the sport of boxing as young men was being able to follow Naz's career. And you're right, he's very much the same kind of ilk, the same kind of style. I love that. It takes so much balls, flamboyancy, confidence, you name it. Name every superlative you want to be able to do that inside the boxing ring. And it's a joy. Mm-hmm. It's at this level. A level that he was beyond 3 years ago. But I ain't complaining because he's never won the British title before. And you know how I feel about British fighters who circumnavigate the British title. You know, I love the fact that he's had to push the reset button, come back to British title level, won it. I'd love to see him actually make a defense or two of this British title. Why not? Agreed. Channel 5 are all in. Wasserman are all in. Let's grow this Josh Kelly brand the way it should have been done the first time around. British, Commonwealth, European. Don't circumnavigate being king of the block, cock of the block, cock of your school, cock of your neighborhood before you take on the best in Europe, the best in the world. Because what will happen is you'll fall short, which is what did happen. I'm heavily invested in Josh Kelly's journey now. I love the fact that when they got ringside afterwards, after that performance, cocky, confident, assured, Naz-style performance, He gets on the microphone and he's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
He's the Josh Kelly, who's a lovely kid. He's the Josh mm-hmm. Kelly that goes, you know what, kids? Here's my soul. The last 18 months were horrific. I was in a very dark place. This belt means the world to me. And you're looking at his body language, you look the way he's talking, you're like, Josh, man, I can only guess what dark place you've been in. Dropped by your promoter, dropped by the TV network, dropped like a stone for losing against the guy, by the way, that's taken on the best welterweight on the planet this weekend, a sensational European champion in David Avanesyan, and yet he gets dropped like a stone. Horrific how he was dealt with and had to come through that. He's far from done. He's got so much left, Josh Kelly. We're back from ground zero now. The roots are back in. He's British champion. Let's get ready to grow. Let's get ready for this acorn to grow again because, mate, it was a joy to watch. A joy to watch. Just baby steps now. That's all I'm going to say. British title defense or two. And then maybe, you know, see if you grow into this weight class physically. If not, back down to welterweight. It's not a problem. It's a massive fan out there with a certain Mr. Ben, if he ever gets his shit together and if he ever comes back to the sport.
I'd like to
see that fight. I'd love to see that fight if he ever comes back to the sport.
Yeah. Let's get his situation sorted first then.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
Wait, are you moving on? I've got one more point to add about Troy Williamson. And
yeah.
It's a bit of praise, but then it's got a caveat to it. And what I want to say is, when it comes to head corners, when it comes to having a coach in your corner that has been there, done it, wore the T-shirt, that controls the corner as eloquently, professionally, calmly as Adam Booth, you're onto a winner. Adam Booth remains one of the best boxing coaches in this country by some distance. I have Adam Booth right up there with the top two or three coaches in the UK. I think he is an astute student of the game. He understands it so well. In the corner, he is so controlled. He's so calm. He gives clear, distinct, patient instructions, two or three. Doesn't fill your head with bullshit. I love the fact Josh Kelly stood up for the whole fight as well. There's real science in that as well, by the way. I've read a few studies on why boxers shouldn't sit down between rounds. I know very few boxers do it, but there's real sports science behind that. You know, think about this. You've run the London Marathon a couple of times, or Shaky Dancy for Rock FM and whatever over the years. Imagine if someone said to you after every mile, "Yeah, Dad, just sit down for a minute, have a little drink, and then get back up and keep going." Like, it's mad, but in boxing, it's always been that way. But the sports science, if you look at it, there's real clear science to go, don't do that. Walk back the corner, have a little drink, listen to an instruction, and then have a little walk, keep your body moving, which is what Josh Kelly did. There's real sports. Anyway, I digress. I thought Adam Booth was sensational in the corner during the fight. During the fight, he's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. After the fight, he fucked it for me. Because after the fight, it then became about Adam Booth's reputation again. And again, I've got nothing but respect for Adam Booth. But in that corner, you've got Josh Kelly holding on to that British title belt like it's the fucking, like it's the undisputed title. Like it's his world. Because in that moment, it was his world. When they went to Adam Booth, he said, "I showed you, this kid's going to be world champion. We're going to be a world champion. He's going to realize his potential. He's going to be a world champion." And in that moment, it was like he didn't read the room. I'm like, no, it's not about what's next, Adam. It's about the journey he's been on to get to here. What happens next will happen. Where his career eventually goes, one day when he becomes a world champion, I'll be on this show and I will say, "I apologize, Mr. Adam Booth. You were right all along. You were right. He is world champion material. I apologize. Thank you, Mr. Booth, for the education." But right now, after a win like that with the British title over his shoulder, I don't need Adam Booth to reassure his own ego and go, "I told you all he'd be a world champion. Well, we're back on track now. We're going to do it." Adam, I don't need you to say it, mate. Just let's get there eventually, eh? I just thought he read the room and his line, his rhetoric was wrong in that moment. Josh has been on a journey. He's got the British title. Let him have that moment, please. So, yeah, love and praise for Adam Booth on today's show, unfortunately.
No, I think that. Listen, man.
Fair. I'm on today, sorry.
Mate, I'm enjoying. Do you know something? I'm enjoying this show. This is what it must be like to be a listener.
Sorry, dude.
Okay, I'm just. Yeah. No, I like it. Right. Okay, then. Chocolatey to Estrada. When you're ready, go on.
Oh, dear.
Apologies. Mate, listen. Not at all. The fight on Saturday night, Chocolatey to Estrada, we billed it last week as the trilogy, obviously, to watch at the weekend. And I stand by that because the first two fights that these two guys dished up most certainly warrant that third fight. I said on last week's show, I thought the fight that Chocolatito had his hand raised, that I thought Estrada won it. And the fight that Estrada had his hand raised, I thought Chocolatito won it. So therefore, there's always been a little bit of who won what fight. You can't really separate either guy. And coming into this third fight, my only concern was obviously the age and time and whether they will have slowed down, in particular Chocolatito. And when I watched the first four or five rounds of this fight, maybe that's an exaggeration. First three rounds, definitely. I'm watching the first three rounds and I'm thinking to myself, oh no, I don't want to blow out. Don't give me a one-sided, easy Estrada trot. Don't do that to me. Don't finish the trilogy like this. And then all of a sudden, obviously Chocolatito must have heard it because then he went, go on then. I'll start throwing some punches again, shall I? And let's get amongst it. And for the second half of the fight, it was exactly how we kind of envisaged it would have been, comparing it obviously to the first and second fights. I just think that Chocolatito started a touch too slow. There's obviously debate right now. People will give us debate saying, I thought Chocolatito nicked it. I thought Estrada nicked it. I personally scored it a draw, mate. I scored it 114-114. You might think that's a shithouse move, me saying that, but I did get it six apiece. And in that, I'll even tell you the round, shall I? Because I think rounds 3 and rounds 11 are the rounds that could go either way. What are you doing that for?
It excites me when we have round in round conversations.
Yeah, yeah. I think rounds 3 and I'll rounds 11.
No, before we dig into round 3 and 11, how did you score the first 3, the first 6, the first 9, the full 12? Did you score it round by round? Do you know where you were at midway point? Where were you at round 6? What was your scorecard at round 6?
5-1.
Me too. I gave the third round to Chocolatito. That's the only round I gave to Chocolatito in the first half of the fight.
See, look at you now. See, I said that third was the one that maybe could be switching it. I thought that Estrada managed to nick himself a draw by winning the last round.
So did I, yeah. Honestly, I apologise. I know listeners want a bit more debate than that, but I gave Chocolatito round 3.
Yeah.
I gave him 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11.
Yeah.
And I thought Estrada, when he needed to, dug out the 12th to rescue the fight and score it as a draw. It was incredibly tight. It was incredibly close. And for Eddie Hearn, who I know loves the show, Eddie, I've just knocked this up for you, lad. This will do you for the new year. There you go. There's the poster ready to go. You can have that. Estrada Chocolatito for Edward. Live on DAZN. There you go. There's the poster. Screenshot that. You can have that. There you go. Hey.
Not against it.
You've got to do it again.
They've got
to do it again. It was so fucking close. They've got to do it again. I've got no issue with anyone that's got Chocolatito by one, anyone that's got Estrada by one. It was that close again. We said in the build-up, I said on Friday's Knicks Picks, you couldn't get a fucking piece of paper between these two. They're so close. At this stage, I think Chocolatito is slowing down. But at this stage, I think going away, of course, Chocolatito, Jesus Christ, to do nothing, to win just one of the first 6 rounds is really alarming. He is a slow starter anyway. He very rarely wins a first round ever. But to not win, to win only one of the first 5 or 6 rounds, Jesus. Yeah. He gifted the fight to Estrada, in my opinion.
Yeah, it was punch output as well, mate. Because these guys throw a lot of shots, don't they? The second fight, they set a record of something like 2,500. Something fucking mad like that. Yeah. And they were considerably off that, the pair of them. But Chocolatito in particular, early doors, just wasn't throwing, not let alone landing. And then all of a sudden it did pick up. I mean, there was certain rounds in there where he did throw over 100 punches, which is just the norm for his career. One of the best little guys that there has ever been. And just the run of round victories in this fight for me from when he was well behind, I was like, wait, Jesus Christ, man. It's like, it was like, what, do you know when you're on the Grand National and your horse is at the back and then all of a sudden it just kicks off? That's what it was like. He just went, fuck off, see you in a bit. And I'm like, going, whoa, he's going to do it. He's actually going to do it. But then fair play to Juan Estrada, because in that last round, he just went for it.
That's how he won the fight.
On my card, he got a draw in that thing. But I think that's how he managed to nick it. Because like I said, going back to the two contentious rounds, sorry to jump in. The two contentious rounds of rounds three, I thought was really, really close. I've no problem with anybody going either way on that. I personally went Chocolatito like you. And I watched it twice, that round in particular. And I thought, have I done that? Because he was so poor in the first and second. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that what I've done? But no, watching it a second time, I'm still convinced that Chocolatito just nicks that round. So I'm happy with my decision there. And round 11 is tight as fuck. That genuinely could go either way. So if you've gone the opposite way than what I went, I've no problem with that either. So I can see 7-5 this way. I can see 7-5 that way. And 6 apiece, I think is fair. Any of those scorecards, I think is fair.
Yeah, I think Estrada, point I was just making there, him winning that last round on all three judges' scorecards. I think anyone that managed to watch the fight is aware that Estrada definitely won that 12th and final round. But that won him the fight because Chris Tellez had Chocolatito one up. Dennis O'Connell had it level as a draw. And Tim Cheeman, the other judge, had Estrada one up. So had he lost that round, Tellez would have had Chocolatito winning it. O'Connell would have had it as a draw, and Cheetham would have had it Estrada by one. So it would have been a draw.
A draw.
Across the scorecards. So that 12th and final round, to dig it out in the manner in which he did it in that round, to win the fight, which he did, was full credit to him. But yeah, man, don't fuck about Eddie. These are the little guys, man. There ain't no conversations here about whatever, no rung for size or whatever. Fuck it, man. Just rinse and repeat. It was a great fight. Couldn't take your eyes off it. Eddie, your poster's done. Enjoy, son.
Did you catch any undercard? Did you see Cesar Martinez on this one? Or did you just cut?
I didn't actually. No, I just watched the main event against Kimona. I read it was lucky. I read it was close. But one of the judges wasn't by a mile.
Yeah, listen. I don't know where I'm at with Cesar Martinez. And this is kind of going to lead me in nicely to the Jaime Munguia conversation that I want to have in a minute. Is he a bit of a myth? Because don't get me wrong, I was looking at, I was ringside for when he beat Charlie Edwards, and I thought, whoa, this dude is serious, man. Serious, serious dude. But in the aftermath of that and the fights that he's had, and he went up in weight and he fought, obviously, Chocolatito and fell short on that particular time. I'm kind of just losing a bit of interest with Julio Cesar Martinez. I want to see him in with Sonny Edwards. I want to see him in with the other guys that are champions in this weight division, just to reaffirm where I actually think that he's at. I hope that they can make that fight because, it was a lackluster display, let's say. It wasn't one of them where you sit there and absolutely wax lyrical about it. It was a lackluster display, and I want to see him in with the unifications. And that leads me on nicely to something that we kind of predicted was going to happen, mate, because everybody's seen that this week. I stuck it on our social media. Guess what, kids? That's right. The WBO called for it. They said, listen, Jaime Munguia, you're the number one with the WBO, son. Gianni Beck needs a scrap. We're going to give you 15 days. Stop fucking dancing around. You've been here for 2 years now at 160. Are you in or you're out? Well, guess what? He's off for the hills, mate. He's off for the hills. He wants absolutely no business whatsoever with Gianni Beck Aliminikuli. There you go. Jaime Munguia turning down the opportunity to fight for the WBO middleweight championship of the world as the number one contender. Now, if the WBO don't boot him out of their rankings, they are an absolute farce. An absolute farce. Because he can't just hold that position now until there's an opportunity that comes along that he fancies. He got to the position was offered, he's turned down the position. In a bit, son. Ta-da. Start again.
It's so embarrassing. It's so embarrassing for him. And I hope the Mexican media are treating it as such as well. Because what is this guy doing? You know, he's just running away. And if he's concerned about, you know, fighting on someone else's card or whatever, then he's not a true boxing champion, is he? He's not a true fighter. And if you are, then get your promoter to put more money on the table. You know, let it go to purse bids and make sure that you win the purse bid if you want home advantage or whatever. It's just, again, it's not surprising, unfortunately. That's a real fight. Let's find out how good you actually are, because this guy can fight and this guy isn't scared. And this guy hasn't got a paper record. But there's two or three fighters knocking around at the moment at the top ends of this sport with 40-0 style records that have never fought fucking anybody. Or have got one or two signature wins in 40 fights. It's embarrassing. Yeah. Really embarrassing.
Do you want to see Canelo fighting Messi? Do you want to see Canelo fighting Sergio Aguero? Do you want to see any of them scraps coming up in the not-so-distant future?
Mad, innit? Absolutely mental.
He
funny Canelo. He
went for it, man.
He was all in, like...
I've never hit Google Translate so much in my entire life. He was violent. It always sounds a little bit more violent, doesn't it, in that Spanish-Mexican. It always sounds a little bit more. But when you hit the translation, because the translation's not absolutely bang on, it makes it sound even more sinister that it's broken. Oh, mate. I really wanted to see it. I wanted to see him like bump into Messi or Aguero when Aguero piped up. Fantastic. Calling them all bastards. what a lad.
What we've got to do now is get Aguero to be ringside in May when he comes to the UK to fight John Ryder. That's what Ryder should do. Get Aguero in his corner. Get Aguero holding pads for him in the build-up just to fucking piss Canelo off. That'd be hilarious.
I'm disappointed, though, that Canelo apologised. He said, sorry, I was defending my flag, defending my country. I'm passionate about Mexico, which we all love. Absolutely can't get enough of that.
Of course.
He should have just gone full McGregor, man. I'd like to apologise to absolutely fucking nobody. That's exactly what he should have done. Gone full McGregor on the situation.
I hope you just get fucking turned over in the last 16, you bastards. That's what he should have done. He should have gone all in.
Fucking night goes, fuck you, motherfuckers. gone for it. Oh, gutted for him. Poor kid.
Mega.
Is there any other news that has happened this week in the world of boxing? Anything that's caught your eye?
Well, you know, Eddie pouring cold water on the Crawford fight this weekend. Of course, Eddie's also announcing that May fight with John Ryder. It was a pretty cool opportunity for Ryder.
Yeah.
Good to see Canelo in the UK. Be nice.
Yeah. And well, did you see? Have you seen the back and forth between Eddie Hearn and Gervonta Davis? Eddie Hearn's made according to Gervonta Davis, he's made an approach to Gervonta offering him $10 million plus obviously negotiations on pay-per-view for a fight on DAZN between him and Ryan Garcia, right? And Gervonta Davis, for some reason, made all this public. He started putting this public and what have you. And I think he's doing it in a way to be derogatory towards the offer that Eddie Hearn has offered him, saying that he gets more money elsewhere. If you'll get it, this is what I mean. This is the kind of the conversation that I was having a couple of weeks back about fighters being overpaid for the things that they do. $10 million plus pay-per-view up, I think he's a really good offer. I think he's a really, really good offer for Gervonta Davis, who, with all due respect, isn't what you would class as a mainstream celeb right now. Yeah, he's a great talent. We all know that. We live in these boxing circles. We know how good the fucker is. And he's right up there with the very best in the world. I think that's a solid offer, mate. One of the questions is, I don't know what his promotional status is right now. So, you know, obviously, if he's under contract with another promoter and Eddie Hearn's making an offer through the back door, maybe that's questionable. I don't know. But Gervonta consistently says in public that he's done with Floyd, he's done with Leonard Ellerby and all these types of things. So if you're any promoter, not just Eddie Hearn, if you're any promoter, one of the best talents in the game of boxing saying that he's promotional free agent and then he manages his own shit, why are you not going to make him an offer? Of course you're going to make him an offer, aren't you? And I think $10 million plus pay-per-view up on a Ryan Garcia fight is a fucking good offer. I just don't get where Gervonta Davis is at. Really don't get where he's at with making all that public and then stating that he gets more money elsewhere. If you are getting more money elsewhere, mate, that's the problem with boxing, because that's why certain fights aren't getting
massively
made.
Overpaid.
Yeah.
Massively overpaid. Completely agree.
Right.
If you're done with news, I've got a little note before we go into this week's previews.
All right.
I need some. Can you do some jingle bells for me? We got any jingle bells there? Can you give ring a bell or something?
Is it a Christmas one?
Yeah. Any Christmas bells for me?
No, I'm not Santa. Go on. What have you got?
Jingle. Ho, ho, ho. Jolly old Saint Nick is here. Just in time for Christmas. Hello, everybody. It's your favorite fight disciple, jolly old Saint Nick. Just in time for Christmas to land you with a brand new set of merch. Yes, fightdisciplesstore.com has had a complete refit. You will see a bunch of new merch on there. We're talking mugs. We're talking scarves for your dog, golf umbrellas, golf towels, cushions for your sofa, mugs, you name it. It's all on there. There's also going to be very soon, might not be today, could be tomorrow, a brand new Fight Disciples Pilsner Lager just in time for Christmas. You're welcome, everybody. And you will be delighted to know I have outsourced the entire operation. I am no longer required to go to the post office with your orders. I apologize for the three people that waited about a month for a pair of socks. It's no longer my responsibility, kids. Somebody else is managing that whole side of Fight Disciples. So the store is live now. Get your orders in for Christmas. You are welcome. Jingle, jingle. Jolly old Saint Nick to the rescue. Let your spouse know, your wife, your husband, your partner, let them know what you want for Christmas is a Fight Disciples mug, cushion, six-pack of lager, and something for the dog.
Any T-shirts?
Coming soon, later this week. Just getting final sign-off on the quality. Listen, you know me, kid. Quality control comes first. Once we sign the T's off, the T's will drop later in the week as well. And if you are a previous purchaser from the Fight Disciples store, keep an eye on your emails this week. I've got Norman, a.k.a. Mike, working on a discount drop, which will be dropping into your email addresses forthwith.
Jesus, man. You've got... What is this commercial operation that you are running? Jesus Christ, he's gone full on in. By the way, that's the first I've heard of any of that. Great stuff. Amazing. Just cracked on. New shot, get cracking.
FightDisciplesStore.com, kids.
Yeah. Wow, man. Fights this weekend. Where do you want to start? We've got Teofimo Lopez on the channel this week. I caught up with him, did a little bit of an interview, did a little bit of a chat. Teofimo Lopez will appear on the Fight Disciples YouTube channel at some point this week. He takes on Sandor Martin. In New York City. I suppose this is going to be classed as a WBC eliminator at super lightweight. Those remember from the WBC convention, there was loads of different fights that got made. Obviously, you had the title fight that we saw a couple of weeks back where Regis Progres became the WBC champion, even though we fully know that the belt really should be connected to a different fight that's happening in the UK next year, the rematch between Taylor and Catterall. But Progres holds a little bit of that real estate now. We were told that Jose Ramirez would be next in line, but he's having a little bit of time out. So, Teofimo Lopez has sped his fight up. He was supposed to be fighting Pedraza. Pedraza pulled out. So he went, oi, Sandor Martin, do you fancy it or what? Let's get it on. And they are getting it on. They're getting it on this weekend. It's a very, very good fight. Sandor Martin is no joke. Spanish fighter, of course, European champion. Went over, beat an aging Mikey Garcia. Let's be honest about that. But his tail will be up and he'll be wanting a shot at world honours. And Teofimo Lopez, new to the weight, will have to be absolutely razor sharp. Having spoken to him, it is good to see him back in a good headspace. I think maybe and this isn't like he went off the rails, but just the perils of fame, the stresses of that, bit of turmoil in his personal life, just got him off the track a touch, I think, Teofimo. I don't think he'll be upset with me saying that over the last couple of years. Speaking to him this week, and speaking to people that have been around him for the last 6 to 9 months, kids back, lasered in, focused up, ready to rock and roll, and ready to make an onslaught on the 140-pound division. Something tells me that Teofimo Lopez prefers to be the hunter than the hunted.
Yeah.
I'm expecting him to be back and bang on it this week. It'll be a good fight, very good fight, tough fight, but I would favour Teofimo to come through this just because skills pay the bills and he's got the equaliser with the power as well.
he has got the equalizer with the power, you're right. And yes, I think, listen, I've got no complaints about this opponent. Sander Martin deserves this opportunity as much as Teofimo. And, you know, that win over Mikey Garcia, regardless, it's still Mikey Garcia, man. And Mikey Garcia had only lost one previous fight. And, you know, okay, regardless of what went on his personal life, to get a win over Mikey Garcia is an incredible achievement. And he did that, and he did that on away soil as well. He did it over in the US. So he's traveled before Sander Martin. The issue you've got with Sander Martin is the exact thing you've just said with Teo. He does not have the equalizer. He's not the biggest puncher. He's a fantastic boxer, but he is not the biggest puncher. And again, someone like Teofimo Lopez, even if you are a tricky southpaw like the Barcelona native is, someone like Teofimo Lopez has just got that equalizer power, especially a Teofimo Lopez, which, you know, I haven't seen the interview yet. I'm looking forward to watching it on Fight Disciples YouTube later in the week. But according to Teo, you know, according to you, Teo sounds like the old Teo again. And the old Teo was an absolutely phenomenal, ferocious fighter. And I'm expecting a big performance from Lopez this weekend at Madison Square Garden. I'm expecting him to rock the microphone, and I'm expecting him to call out the winner of Josh Taylor and Jack Cattrall. Hopefully that means we're going to get Teo over to the UK. We've got a good relationship with him. We will invite him over to be ringside for that fight. We will have him out with the lads, not drinking, of course, but we'll have him out with the lads. We'll get him some Monterex gear on his back for Teo. But yeah, that's the fight to make, man. Go through Sander Martin this weekend. Scream for the winner of Cattrall and Taylor, and then get over to the UK like Usyk did and make yourself a fight, Mr. Lopez, please.
We've also got Terence Crawford out this weekend. It's not on the same card. It's on a different card. This is in Omaha. Terence Crawford taking on David Avanesian. Now, on paper, you look at this fight and you think to yourself, it's a nice fight, that. It's a solid fight. David Avanesian, obviously above European level, maybe just a touch below world level, taking on one of the best fighters in the world. It's a good challenge for Terence Crawford, and I'm sure David Avanesian will raise his game. However, it comes with a tinge of sadness. Of course it does, because how long have we been talking about Terence Crawford fighting Errol Spence? Terence Crawford's also having a little bit of a social media back and forth with the Charlo boys. Crawford, as I've said on many occasions, is for me the best at 147. I think he beats him. Yeah. But it's getting to the point now where it's just far too much talk. It's far too much talk. So I've I've absolutely full understanding of every single fan that looks at this fight and just goes meh at the weekend. Because we all would look at it, and because of the style of David Avanesian, you would think Crawford's going to comfortably take care of him. And I would say that, and that pains me to say because I love David Avanesian. I think he's earned an opportunity to fight at the very top table. This is that opportunity. But Terence Crawford should be fighting Errol Spence. That's it. That's all I've really got to say on it. Terence Crawford should be fighting Errol Spence. He shouldn't be fighting anybody else other than Errol Spence.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Obviously, that's the fight that should be happening right now, but Errol Spence and his team don't want it to happen for whatever reason. Maybe they're scared of him losing. That's just the fact. So he's got to fight somebody, Terence Crawford. And I'll tell you now, this is why I like the fight. David Avanesian beats Amir Khan. David Avanesian beats Kavalauskas. David Avanesian beats Kell Brook. And David Avanesian beats Sean Porter. They are Terence Crawford's last four opponents. David Avanesian is better than them all. So I like this fight because, yes, it's maybe not the fight that we want in this weight division, of course, but as a second choice, it's right up there. Avanesian is absolutely undervalued by the American audience. He is a phenomenal, phenomenal talent, incredible boxing brain, punches with real power, doesn't mind it in the trenches, can box with anybody, and against any other welterweight on the planet, I fancy Avanesian. The problem is there's two guys at the top of the tree that just look like generational style fighters. We should be seeing them together. We should be onto the fucking trilogy by now. I think Errol Spence and Terence Crawford right now are the only two welterweights on the planet that are able to beat David Avanesian. But I tell you now, it will be a fight. For as long as it lasts, it will be a fight. Avanesian is better than all of Crawford's previous opponents at welterweight. I stand by that.
That's fair. That's fair. And if Crawford, like you just said, if the audience are underestimating, if Crawford underestimates him, could be in for something special come Saturday night. I don't think it's Crawford will.
Nebraska. It's Terrence's hometown. So, you know, Avanesian's going to need a knockout to get a draw. There's that element of it as well. But if Terrence Crawford isn't switched on for this fight, I tell you now, he could be up for a rude awakening.
Back in the UK, Josh Warrington's out in full force, taking on Lopez. We've been here before with Josh, where we're taking on a fighter where maybe the majority of the fight fan base don't know too much about. Maurizio Lara springs to mind, and Maurizio Lara came over and obviously did a number on Josh on that particular night. That was behind closed doors. This is a little bit different, of course, because it's in front of Josh's home faithful, something that he absolutely thrives off. I've just watched a little bit of tape over the last few days on Lopez whilst I was bored in my hotel room on Saturday, just to get a little bit of a feel for what he is. He's quick, man. He's quick.
He's fast. He dazzled. He beat, what's his name, didn't he? Tyson's little mate.
Isaac Lowe.
Isaac Lowe. That was the fight I remember watching him in. Yeah, he beat Isaac Lowe, yeah.
Josh will have to be defensively sound against this kid because his hands are that fast and he throws the combinations that he does throw. There are punches there that come in from a blind side. So therefore, he could catch Josh with something that he doesn't see. He'll have to be defensively sound. His footwork will have to be bang on, as it, you know, 95% of the time it is with Josh. And with all due respect to him, he's going to have to be patient because Lopez looks tough as fuck as well. Doesn't look like he's going to swallow it. He's going to spew it in front of the fans. And he doesn't look like he's going to be taken out early. I think it could be a good fight. I think Josh is going to be asked some serious questions from Lopez. I would favour Josh to come through on a points decision. But there might be a bit of jeopardy in this. I think you're in for a good night if you go into this one in Leeds.
Yeah, listen, them nights with Josh Warrington and Leeds are always great nights. And, you know, Ebony Bridges on the undercard as well. And I don't think I've ever seen Ebony Bridges in a dull fight. She's matched well, you know. My views on her world title belt don't really matter. I've never seen her in a dull fight. So that'll be fun as well. I guarantee Shannon O'Connell brings it and they're going to have a fucking war because that's the only fight she's in. But you're right. It's all about the main event. It's all about Josh Warrington and this second reign as featherweight champion. I think there's some monumental fights out there for him. Domestically, I think there's a thriving featherweight scene domestically is absolutely brilliant. And I think Josh Warrington is probably the cash cow at the front of that just because he fills arenas like nobody else. So, listen, lightning doesn't strike twice. You know, Lopez is a good Mexican, but he hasn't got anywhere near the type of power that Maurizio Lara's got. They're not going to make that mistake again. But you're right, Lopez is a little workhorse and he has got a terrific chin. So Josh Warrington's got to be ready for the full 12 rounds. I believe he will be. I believe this fighter is a little bit made for Josh Warrington as well. And I'm expecting a real statement performance from the champ.
Coincidence that across the Irish Sea on the same night that Michael Conlon will be back in the ring. Do you think they're trying to line something up there? Can you imagine that? Josh Warrington, Michael Conlon? I mean, don't get me wrong. Michael Conlon's in a hell of a fight on Saturday night.
Yeah. He's no joke, man.
Yeah. Kareem Guerfi is absolutely no joke. It's actually a solid card, that. I'm looking down the list of fighters that are on there in the matchups that they've got. Again, that could be a good night. But again, if Conlon comes through, Warrington comes through, that could be the one, couldn't it?
100%. Because you're talking about putting bums on seats. You're talking about... you know, bringing in the fans, and Michael Conlon obviously brings in a massive fan base as well. So I think that would be a sensational fight for Josh Warrington. I think it's a fight easy to make as well. But, you know, the thing with Conlon is, yes, he had that loss to Lee Wood. And for most fighters, that would take some serious mental rehabilitation. But Michael Conlon understands the game enough to be able to remove himself from it and go, right, I was winning the fight. I got caught. It was Lee Wood's night. I'll go away, but I ain't dropping levels. And he didn't drop levels last time out against Mariaga. He hasn't necessarily dropped big levels again against Kareem Guerfi. He's been there, done it, and wore the T-shirt.
Yeah.
He's a high-level opponent, and he's staying at this high level. And, you know, it's Michael Conlon. Chances are we're going to get the full 10 rounds. But if he boxes this kid's head off like he did with Mariaga last time out, they're 10 valuable rounds, invaluable rounds. And I think, unlike Lee Wood, I think Josh Warrington doesn't carry the same type of power as Lee Wood. I think it's a fantastic fight. I think you're absolutely right. That's exactly why the Conlons are putting this show on. And listen, you talk about the card being stacked. There's some great fight on there, but they dare not put a bad fight card on because it's fucking Belfast. And Belfast people speak with their money. And if you don't put a solid fight card on, guess what? This ain't Tottenham Hotspur Stadium where people will seemingly turn up just to see Tyson parade around. If you don't put a decent fight card on, people at Belfast ain't going. So you've got no fucking choice. That's the difficulty of putting fight cards on in a place like Belfast. So that's why it's a good card. Tyron McKenna, Liam Taylor is a decent fight, man. That's a good
it's a good fight.
Rounder. Yeah, it's a cracker.
It's a good fight. So yeah, a bit of British action this weekend. If you've got a ticket, you're going to go and watch that. Might be the last one of your years before we finish for Christmas, of course. Enjoy those. And I've no doubt that you'll be tuning in the early hours of the morning for a little bit of Crawford Evanesi and Teofimo Lopez taking on Sandor Martin stateside. Thank you very much for watching or listening to us, all powered by Monterex. You can see the tackle that he's got on there. Hopefully I'll get mine very, very soon. As he said, the Fight Disciples store is now up and running. The links are on our website, fightdisciples.com. Go and have a little bit of a look. New t-shirts going to be in the new design of the new t-shirts, which features both our faces. That's right. I want you to parade our faces at all those upcoming events in 2023. T-shirts will be available on our store there. You can subscribe to our podcast via iTunes and via YouTube. Fight Disciples is what you're looking for. And if you need anything else, including your Spotify, thank you very much for letting us know that you listen to us via Spotify this week. That is all available on our website, fightdisciples.com. Thank you very much for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe via iTunes.